It's been so long since we hijacked Sci-Fi Diner.
This is going to be an interesting evening.
Our last best hope for sci-fi.
Raul Wybera?
Oh, he's been around a lot.
It's in the script.
This is not the Dark Matter podcast.
Jim Arrowwood?
Well, there it is.
No boom today.
There's always boom tomorrow.
I might be able to help with that.
Hello there, Babylon 5 fans.
Yeah, this is supposed to be a family show.
We know what people think.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor.
I'm at a loss for words. J.P. Harvey.
You get this warm, fuzzy moment, you know?
Well, he's not playing Zaphis this time either. He's playing Zaphis.
I'm going to withhold comment.
The year is 2019. The place... The Babylon Project Podcast.
Hello there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to our next. It's Byron, so I'm not going to say exciting or thrill packed. But our next wonderful episode of the Babylon Project podcast. And why do I say it's wonderful? I say it's wonderful because I am joined, as always, by my good friends Jim Arrowwood and JP Harvey. How are you guys tonight?
Good. How are we all doing here?
Doing great over here.
Better than most, not as good as some.
We're on the green side of the grass, so that's a good thing. It's always summertime in Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's brown and sandy.
So what are we talking about?
I have the foggiest freaking idea.
Jim, what episode are we going to talk about tonight?
Okay, this one is In the Kingdom of the Blind.
Okay, wait a minute. That's a Byron episode, right?
Well, yeah, I didn't write the thing. Don't
JP,
blame me.
JP, well, how's the weather there in Vegas?
All right, so at any rate, yeah. See, I don't even know what season it is. The Mythical Season 5. This is the 9th episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which turns out to be not so mythical after all.
Yeah, there actually is a Season 5. And we're 9 episodes into it. Whoa.
Closing on the halfway point here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think before we get started, we have two choices. I can do some more cheesy one-liners, or you can give us a summary, Jim.
Okay.
I'll leave it up to you.
I'll do the summary. I'll do that.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
Londo and Jakar arrive on Centauri Prime, causing some disquiet among the members of the court. Minister Jano informs Londo that the regent has been acting strangely lately, talking to himself, drinking, and muttering strange things. This surprises Londo because he has never known the regent to drink. When Jano returns to his quarters, he is killed by the regent's agents. Londo is also attacked, and an attempt on his life by Minister Vol is turned around by a mysterious telekinetic alien. The regent further tells Londo that he will become emperor soon and that certain aliens want Londo to stop asking questions about goings-on Centauri Prime. Enraged about the telepaths being created to be used by humans as well as other alien races, Byron's followers use their ability to follow Alliance ambassadors to get secrets from them. Byron tricks Garibaldi into getting him into an Alliance meeting where Byron informs the Council that if his demand that a telepath homeworld is not met, he will begin releasing the secrets that his people have discovered. Byron's efforts backfire when sympathies turn away from the telepaths. Some are attacked when they go for supplies. Sheridan withdraws their protection, and Byron and his followers go on a hunger strike to raise public sympathy. Some of the telepath group disagree with Byron's pacifist ideas and break off from the group and take up arms. There has been a huge increase of attacks on Alliance shipping, but the cargoes are not being taken, so it would seem that it is not raiders who are performing the attacks. While it is not obvious to the members of the Alliance, we see that it is Centauri ships that are carrying out the attacks. Well, there it is.
There it is. When you actually watch this the first time, you kind of wonder, is this a, you know, it's like, are there three stories here? But the truth is, it turns out there's only two stories here.
Character files opened.
We actually have some guest cast tonight.
Yeah, we do.
And people aren't just coming back.
No, not. We got some new people, some one-offs, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We got, of course, Robert Atkin Downs as Byron, 7th of 9 appearances on Babylon 5.
And counting.
Yes. Well, we got two more. All right. Neil Hunt as Minister Vitari, his only appearance on Babylon 5. Damian London returns as Regent Virini, his 7th of 9 appearances on Babylon 5. Victor Love appears as a telepath, and this is his first of two appearances as a telepath on the show, and he has had lots of work, much of it as a voice actor. Okay, Francis X. McCarthy as Minister Vole. This is his only appearance on Babylon 5. He's also been on ALF, Alien Nation, Mantis, Sequest 2032, Third Rock from the Sun, and had a part in Interstellar.
And just about every other show that's, see, when you look at it, his credits, they go on forever.
Yes. Ian Ogilvy as Lord Jono. His is his only appearance on Babylon 5. He's got numerous credits back to 1958. And he continues to work in England. Under featuring, we have David D. Darling as the Drazi. David D. Darling Drazi. A lot of D's there. His second of two appearances on Babylon 5, and he was a guard in Soul Hunter. Okay, and he's the one who wielded the whip.
Uh-huh.
Yep, and then... go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, McCarthy and Ogilvy were two people that you saw them and it's like, you know I've seen this guy from somewhere and I just can't quite place it. And then you look at their credits and it's like, okay, I still don't remember where I saw them, but I know I remember them from some of this stuff.
Okay. Let's see.
Minions.
Yeah. Yes, and under uncredited, we have more Byron Minions. So that is our guest cast for this show.
Yep, and looking at the Minions, you know, actually was, I kind of had a, doing my before the show watch. I'm sitting there thinking, okay, two very bright blondes in that crowd of otherwise goths. Yeah, two minion looking ones there.
Yeah.
But
they all have soft, silky hair.
Yeah.
Initiating plot analysis.
The only way to do it is to dive in. So we've got someone, as you said, hitting the shipping lanes, but they're leaving the loot. And one of the things that stood out about this, it was military style hits, not raiders. And then they're hitting everyone randomly.
Yeah, and they're not taking any cargo.
No. Just leaving it.
Yeah. And it's like a search and destroy thing, seems.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, we did see one little, like, slice off a corner of the attacking ship. And it was kind of curved and was purple. So was that a Centauri ship wing, perchance?
Could have been. It might have been.
it was stunning in purple, so.
Explosive in purple.
That too.
Yeah. Anyway, back on Centauri Prime. Now, this Centauri Prime side of the show, tonight's show, it is brilliant. I loved it. It's funny. It's dramatic. It's heartbreaking at points. But we start off with some classic Londo and Jakar. Let's go ahead and hit that clip, sir.
Minister Vatere, I wasn't joking. His name is Jakar. And he is my bodyguard. And I can find my room very well on my own. Thank you.
What time is dinner here?
Sundown.
Good, I'm starved.
Yeah.
You hear all the mumbling in the background as everybody's totally curious about Jakar.
Yeah, it's like this the first time they've never seen a Narn out of chains.
Out of chains, yeah, I like that. But Jakar is only worried about one thing.
Dinner.
What's for dinner?
Yeah, and I'll bet Spoo is on the menu.
And this is actually the start of what's going to be a running gag throughout several episodes going forward. Jakar and dinner is going to be a thing.
Oh, it has been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his little crawdad's crawling away off of his plate. Great big pig's head that he never got to because he kept getting interrupted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So food's been an important item in Jakar's history.
In an episode or two, it's going to be particularly important. It's going to be an important little clue for something.
Yes.
But we're not talking about that episode. We're talking about this episode. And in this episode, we've got a bunch of suspicious acting telepaths. And Byron trying to make a case.
Yeah, they're about as subtle as a bunch of atomic bombs.
Yeah. Jim, go ahead and play us Byron's case.
Okay.
Yesterday, something happened that will change the lives of everyone. Perhaps even alter the course of the future. Most of you know Leta Alexander. During the Shadow War, she served the Vorlons, acted as their go-between. They adjusted her abilities, made her stronger, and revealed the truth to her. And last night, she revealed it to us. While some telepaths on other worlds evolved naturally, the majority were created by the Vorlons through centuries of genetic manipulation. They created us so we could be used by the other worlds as weapons in their war against the Shadows. That is all we are to them. Things to be used and thrown away. All that was bad enough. But to find that we would not even be telepaths, would not be hunted down and caged and controlled if the Vorlons had not interfered with our genetic makeup, made us into what we are.
Byron, what is done is done. We can't change what we are.
No, we can't. But if we are what we are because we were made this way, then I have to look at our makers and say you are responsible.
The Vorlons are gone. The Vorlons, the Shadows, they're all gone. There's no one left.
Yes. But their legacy remains. We are that legacy. A legacy created with one purpose. To serve the other worlds in a war that is now over. Which leaves us where? Abandoned? Alone? No. There is another way. But it is dangerous.
Okay. At best, Byron's case is weak.
Yeah.
Really weak. The only telepaths that I see that are, quote, abandoned and alone, unquote, is this little group who have stuck themselves in down below.
Yeah, they're abandoned and alone by choice.
Uh-huh. And he kind of misses the entire goal of the Vorlons.
Well, you know, it seems like he is losing the entire goal for his own people.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounds like now we're going to get back at the races that have telepaths that were created by Vorlons, because the Vorlons aren't available to be directly addressed.
Right.
And, you know, even though Leta does her level best to say, look, you know, this is done. It's time to move on and let's keep our goal in mind. He's not having any part of this. He's starting down a path that is going to lead probably to his own undoing.
Yep. And, you know, Leta had far more done to her than any injustice he can claim.
Mm.
And as far as, I'm sorry, it's hard to even call it an injustice. All the Vorlons did was speed things up.
Mm-hmm.
There are still plenty of races where telepaths have developed naturally rather than created by the Vorlons, including the Vorlons. So, no, it's... I'm trying to think of another way. Spoiled and entitled.
The other thing that Leta brought up in episodes past was, in the context of Earth, we're all humans. And he rejects that.
Mm-hmm.
No, good we're point. Different. We're, well, yeah, you're different, but you're still human. Nope. He didn't say it, but I'll say it for him. I refuse to integrate or reintegrate back into the people that I am, in with the people that I am. Because I'm mad at the Vorlons, because I'm different. Okay, well, some of your own different people are saying your difference doesn't matter in the grander scheme. But he, you know, nope, we're abandoned. I need my own planet.
Well,
I
in
don't
essence,
know how you help somebody like that.
Back in the beginning, when we first got Byron, he was just like Bester. We're better than human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it lasted all the way up until he found out that it was because the Vorlons, as I said it, sped things up a bit.
Right.
No, sorry. You've lost your case already, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things, aside from the sappiness, it's that whole entitlement concept with Byron that really just frosts me so much with him.
Yeah.
The good news is we're going to get to see where that goes eventually.
Indeed.
Are our views of Byron reasonable or unreasonable? We're going to find out.
Yep. In the meantime, Londo is catching up at home. Things have been quiet on Centauri Prime, but it turns out that may not be as good of a thing as everything's quiet on the home front generally sounds. The minister's been hiding for 2 months. The times that he's been seen, he's been drunk as a lord, which is unusual because he's normally a teetotaler.
Yeah.
And the fleet has been doing something hidden. He's getting all of this information from Lord Jano.
Yeah. You know, and Jano is a character I really liked.
Yep.
And he describes the regent as not himself.
Yeah.
Which is really sad because Damian London was a guy. How could you dislike this guy? I mean, really, pastels?
Yep.
You know,
yeah, that's going to come up before it goes too much further, in fact.
Yeah. So by appointing this man regent, he, you know, it seems like they kind of condemned him to a very sad existence.
Yeah, but not just because of the duties of office. But, you know, like you said with Jono, sorry, good guy. Translation, I have a feeling he's not going to make it through the night.
Yeah, well, he's probably the most likable Centauri we've met so far.
Next to Turan's minister?
Yes.
Way back in season one or two, yeah.
But, I mean, you know, we definitely love Londo, but for a whole different reason.
Right. Well, when Jono gets back to his quarters, the regent's there waiting for him. And like you said, Jim, he is absolutely not himself.
Mm-mm. And we are way beyond pastels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why does he say, no, we're beyond bright colors? Pastels and bright, aren't they kind of opposites?
I don't know. I think it's just an emphasis of the darkness that is literally there and the darkness yep. that is figuratively there that we actually don't know about quite yet.
Speaking of darkness, this is something I've always wondered. Have you ever noticed that the quarters on Centauri Prime look like they're underground dungeons? This is supposed to be the Bloody Palace.
Well, yeah, but they're, you know,
even before the darkness and the shadows, the quarters look like they're just hewn out of stone.
Well, I don't know. Maybe people don't spend a whole lot of time in there, but you know, if it's a photography thing just to show, you know, to show that, yeah, there's some really dark things going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we have the regent not behaving the way the regent normally behaves, who is making the decisions?
Yes, because one of his last words to Jono was how he doesn't wish any harm. If it was up to him, it would he'd never let any harm come to him. Then he says it's not up to him, and sure enough, Jono doesn't make it through the night.
No.
So someone is pulling the regent's strings.
And did we talk about it, or was I just thinking about it? What, you know, when Londo hears that the minister has not only been in hiding and that he's drunk, that's the cause for alarm. Do you remember the Londo's reaction to that? Which is funny, but it's not funny.
Was dead serious when he said it, but yeah. His answer, well, yeah, it was funny, about sobriety as a vice.
Right. He cultivated sobriety as his only vice. That, you know, kind of a line I wish I could find a time to deliver in the real world here somewhere. But you know, that's, Londo knows there is something horribly wrong at this point. And,
right.
And I think we... I mean, we know because we've seen the show, as many of the listeners have, but, you know, that's also a hint of what the problem may be. And then we're going to, of course, have that verified for us in a bit. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not good.
He won't get the answers, but we sure will. Sheridan, back on Bab 5, is... And actually, this is rather related. Just lets the league know that, oh, hey, there's going to be an update on shipping lines in your email. Yeah. Punt. What's important about that little scene, though, is, okay, this is a secure area of the station. It's in the either the ambassadorial or the command, you know, levels. And... no one notices a bunch of scruffy goth humans trailing along behind the ambassadors.
Scruffy goth humans with silky hair.
With silky hair, yes. Jim, ding yourself on that one.
Oh, no, that's fine. Anyway, they keep you know, they're standing around and the ambassadors get off of the lift or come out of that, come out of the room, one or the other. I can't remember which it was, but they're all just kind of standing around. And then the telepaths start peeling off and following them around, you know, and nobody's noticing this.
Garibaldi needs to hire a new security staff.
I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think with that many high officials moving from one place to another, there would be a little more security contingent.
At least someone with a concept of situational awareness.
Yeah. Especially since you've got the president of the galaxy just in the next room.
Scroob's there?
Yeah, wrong.
Okay.
So the teeps are up to something, though. They're tracking these ambassadors.
And don't worry, that plot will thicken shortly.
Oh, boy.
We'll have that one cleared up for us before the episode's over. Hey, did you notice we got a new view of Centauri Prime as we go back to the Lando Chakar story?
Yeah.
They won't let Lando see the regent. And this is the prime minister here?
Yeah. It's pretty cheeky the way that guy talks to Lando, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, some lackey getting uppity with the next in line to the... Not just next in line to the throne, but he's going to be on the throne.
Yeah. Well, he is now prime minister.
Yep.
And, you know, it's kind of, I thought that was the way this guy was talking down to Lando. I just thought that, you know, you risk much there, partner.
Yeah, especially when you consider the amount of authority that the Emperor has and that it's going to be landing on Lando's shoulders in, you know, probably a few weeks to a few months' time.
Mm-hmm.
We do find out Lord Jano is missing.
Yeah, Lando's looking for him. He's supposed to meet him there. And he, you know, hey, where's Lord Jano? And it's like, well, it's not my day to watch him. Is roughly what the guy says. It's like, you, turkey.
You know, when your prime minister is asking for someone like that, generally you would think the more appropriate response is, I'll find him immediately.
Or, right. Yeah.
We'll go find him.
Yep. People are upset, it seems, about Jakar. At least some are. It looks like a lot of others are just incredibly curious about him.
Yeah, they're kind of fascinated.
Yeah, they're almost acting like Drazi, poking him. And was it in this scene or was it in the first scene when he first came on? Did anyone notice the come hither look that one of the Centauri maidens, you know, with the...
Yes.
Okay, all right. Someone else besides me noticed it.
Yeah, oh yeah. And
so Jakar playground.
Yeah, well, we know how Jakar likes the ladies.
Yep. However, that's not the part of Jakar that is worth bringing up here.
Mm-mm.
Minister is it? Vito, I think it might be, has a little present for Jakar. I think he's trying to make a point. And in geek terminology, there's a phrase called pwned, PWND.
Ah.
Jakar more or less pwns him. You've got that clip. Now, this is a longer clip, but it is absolutely worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Narns are barbarians, primitives. Turn your back on them for a second, they'll stick a knife in it.
A Narn would never stab a Centauri in the back. It has always been our tradition to go for the chest. That way you can see the life go out of their eyes as they fall.
Jakar.
Just doing my best in the interests of accuracy. So you were in error, it happens. Be assured that I do not carry a grudge.
No? Interesting. I brought someone with me. Do you recognize him?
Yes. This is the Centauri that whipped me before Cartesia.
And do you recognize what he is holding?
Yes, that is the whip he used.
I put his fate in your hands. In front of all these witnesses, I say that you will not be prosecuted or charged for anything you might do. Go on.
Tell me, Minister, if I were to strike you, which would you be angry at, the hand that struck you or the heart that commanded the hand to strike?
Well, the heart, of course.
The hand has no choice but to do as it is told. It is the heart that carries the burden, and that heart is dead in both of us, Minister. It died with Cartesia, and it died in me soon after. Besides, everyone knows that the true source of pain is neither the hand nor the heart. It is the mouth. Is it not, Minister?
Harry, I think that you should follow me.
So, yeah, Jakar takes the high road here. He had his...
Yeah.
He was given a golden opportunity to take some revenge, but Jakar has changed.
And the Centauri... At least some of the Centauri are definitely not.
Well, did you see the look on Londo's face? It was like, oh, crap.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, it was sort of a, this is not going to be pretty looking.
No, this is not going to end well. But
another fine mess you've gotten us into.
Though in truth, I can't help but wonder if it would have been a little easier on Londo in some ways if Jakar had taken some revenge.
Well, you know, that minister was baiting Jakar. And
yes.
So if Jakar had decided to take his revenge, it would have been, see, this is the way the Narn are. They're the same as they ever were. They're never going to change. And, you know, he'll have illustrated his point, but, you know,
but Londo would have the excuse of, well, this is why I have him as a bodyguard. Keep that in mind.
But Jakar puts it right back in that guy's face. And it's like, it's
brilliantly.
The mouth.
Yep.
That's the source of the trouble.
And at the end of that clip, come quickly. Well, that one minister, found Lord Janno for Londo. It looks like Janno hanged himself.
Well, that's what they're saying. It looks like.
Looks like. Exactly. Well, we saw him fly across the room and crumple like a lump sack against the far wall. So.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, we've got to do it. Byron wants to address the council. And that dark path that either you or JP had talked about, well, he starts it out by scanning Mike and then lying about the shipping problems in order to get in front of the council.
Yeah, he absolutely, you know, first of all, he scans Mike without permission. Secondly, he just fabricates this whole thing. It's like, I know stuff that you need to know, and if I get to talk to the council, I'll tell them, but I have to tell them. If I don't tell them, it's not going to be told.
Yeah. And that dark path just gets darker. Oh, well, one thing that's not so dark, did you notice the new alliance symbol in the council's chambers?
Yeah. Could that be a triluminary?
Could be. Anyway, rather than talk to the council about the shipping problems, he passes out a little explanation about the Vorlon engineering and pitches his desire for a homeworld.
More like a demand.
Well, it's a desire up until the point that he points out that, by the way, we've spent 2 days following you and scanning you, and we're going to dump all your secrets unless you give us that homeworld.
Yeah. And he, you know, he steps right up front and says, well, I'm going to deviate from my planned remarks to hand out this little notebook of demands, you know.
I'm sorry, he reminds me of Bester.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
Yep.
But well, he does.
It's the same tactics.
He talks like him in terms of how he describes.
Yeah. Except for the adherence to nonviolence.
Yeah.
But he
comes in saying, I'm going to talk about shipping problems. I know things. And then whether he knows things or not, he's there to drop an ultimatum, a threat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he doesn't actually know anything more than Mike does. Excuse me, Michael. He doesn't know anything any more than what Michael knows, which is the same as what everybody else knows. The shipping is being attacked and cargoes are not being seized, and it just seems to be like a bunch of hit-and-run military operations.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a real hypocrisy to what he's doing, because not all violence is physical.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean,
well, and Mike punctuates it by saying, never, ever, ever trust a telepath.
This is going to be a harsh way of putting it, but they went to innocent people, forcibly invaded their most private areas, and forcibly took something from them and inflicted. I mean, it was essentially a rape.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's. Once he made that threat, there's only one way this could end.
Now,
at that point.
Now, if I am recalling correctly, I don't recall Bester ever probing somebody's mind without them knowing it. Do either one of you recall that happening at some point?
Without them knowing it?
Yeah. I don't ever recall Bester extracting information from somebody without them knowing it. Other than, of course, the way he treated Michael. But my point is Byron has now gone lower than Bester.
Yeah, hiding behind, I'm not going to be violent. He's actually doing something that you could argue easily is much worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And there's only one end to this. Now Sheridan thinks at least part of that threat's a bluff, because all they could do was a surface scan. And Delenn even has a legitimate point on the telepath's case, considering the way the humans implemented the Psi-Corps and everything, she can understand, you know, she could have some sympathy behind how they might feel the way they feel.
Mm-hmm.
However, Sheridan's response, can we say deja vu?
Yeah.
Play that one for us.
Perhaps they are right. It is true that the Vorlons guided their evolution, creating telepaths for their own purposes, to serve our needs in the war. Perhaps we do have an obligation to them.
Fine, I'll set them up a trust fund, but a homeworld of their own, come on.
If you were hated by your own race, forced to join the Psi-Corps, or forced to take drugs to inhibit your talents for the rest of your life, if you had been hunted and enslaved by the others, would you not want a place of your own? A place where others like you could gather safely without fear of persecution.
Okay, I grant you, on a strictly idealistic level, it's understandable. But they did it the wrong way, the inconvenient way.
I seem to recall the Earth president saying the same thing to you after your civil war.
I hate it that she has a memory, don't you?
Damned inconvenient.
Well, at least it's still a political problem. So far, it hasn't turned violent.
Famous
yet
last words.
Yeah,
you talked right over Garibaldi's last insertion there. He said, at least Sheridan says, at least it hasn't turned violent. And a few seconds, he walks out of the room and Michael's standing there and he goes, yet. So we know what's coming, but
yep.
You know, there's Sheridan, you know, standing there with his pants down around his ankles because, you know, how soon we forget.
Yeah. He's the one that said they could come there to begin with.
Yeah. Well, judging their methods, how inconvenient mm-hmm. it is. And so his little coup was rather inconvenient also.
Yeah.
According to what they say. And, you know, I'm not equating at all Byron and Sheridan. But Delenn is going to let him know, look, the same thing was said about you. So, you know, let's step back and take mm-hmm. a look here. And she just turns around, drop the mic and walk away.
Yep.
Because she can.
Yes.
Because she can. Because
she's Delenn.
Well, seems that speaking truth to power is bit of a thing. Londo finally gets to the regent.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he gets to the regent, heads to the regent, rather, just in time for an assassination attempt.
Yeah.
That actually should have succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
Because it turns out it was that minister that was baiting Jakar.
Uh-huh.
Londo was inconvenient to his plans.
Yeah. And so he threw a dagger at him, and it was right on target until it stopped in midair.
And not just stopped, went back right on target.
Mm-hmm.
And in the shadows, we see something that I sure think looks a lot like one of those drocks of Delenn's.
Yeah, probably. Kind of hard to tell, though, because he was more in focus than the Drock that Delenn met.
Yeah, no more of the abandoned effect.
Yeah, the kind of looked like the weird-dressed Captain Jack Sparrow kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, but Jakar does a pretty darn good job dispatching three Centauri.
Though it seemed like he was enjoying that last one too long. For too, you know, too much.
Yeah.
It's like, finish him off already.
He needed to take a little bit of time to work up an appetite.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably almost lunchtime.
Well, Byron is beginning to reap the rewards of his actions. Some of his people aren't listening to him. And, you know, what can you expect? Oh, gee, we're going to go and try and take as many of their deepest secrets as we can. Then we're going to threaten them with it.
Yeah.
You think that might not have painted a bullseye on the back of any telepath on the station?
Well, obviously the butterfly net method is not going to work.
Yeah.
You know, and these people want to get on with their lives.
Yep. And his threat made the confrontation, that attack on the telepath, inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
And once that group of telepaths broke away and attacked back. As of that moment, the entire colony is doomed. It's a matter of how much blood. That's it.
Well, as you're very fond of saying yourself, you know, there are consequences to decisions, and Byron has made one after another bad decisions that has led to, okay, you know, that's it. You're not getting the job done. We're going to have to try something different.
Yeah. Emotional decisions, not intellectual decisions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that might be part of what annoys me so much about the character. He's almost entirely driven by emotion. Not just now, but I mean before. And reason seems to have a distant second place.
Yeah.
So, well, Lockley sends, I think you had mentioned before, it's on Sheridan. Well, Lockley seems to agree because she sends Zach to say, "I told you so."
Well, you know, she said no. She absolutely was not going to allow this telepath colony. And she got overridden by President of the Galaxy Sheridan, who, you know, not very long after he said, "Well, I will take care of this end. You will take care of running the station." And then he just started making decisions right over the top of her.
Mm-hmm. It was I didn't say "I told you so" wasn't justified.
Oh,
it certainly was.
Totally. And she should have been there to do it herself.
Well, I have a feeling she's busy trying to clean up the mess. And welcome to the telepath war.
Yeah.
Though, yeah. In the discussion, what is it? 150 telepaths at most, maybe 50 on the low end.
Of which we see about 15 regularly.
Yeah, I think calling it a war might be overstating it a bit.
Well, yeah.
Just saying.
A conflict, a telepath disagreement.
I like tussle.
Tussle. A telepath tussle. I like that.
That's
because you can also, you know, tussle their silky hair. Which would probably freak him out.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yep. Well, Byron continues to want to try for a peaceful outcome, but, you know, his threat pretty much eliminated that option. He made it 50 telepaths against the entire universe.
Oh, yeah.
Which incidentally includes at least thousands, more likely, if you take the other races in, millions of other telepaths as well that are going to be fighting against them.
Yeah. And to set the scene, okay, the whole thing was giving the telepaths any quarter was a bad idea, and Bester could have solved the entire problem very, very quickly.
Yeah.
He's been on the station once. He was ready to gather everybody up. Now it's gotten to a different point, and we're still waiting for the, health quarantine to end.
Yeah.
And now Sheridan is withdrawing his protection and is basically telling them, "That's it. You're done. You will disband. You will come out into the open or else."
You know, and Bester technically was right in this. It was an internal Earth issue. Even when Sheridan was connected with Earth,
mm-hmm.
he let Franklin funnel the telepaths through, but they didn't stay as a colony.
Yeah.
Babylon 5 as a station kept a level of neutrality in it.
Yeah.
If he is like, "Okay, look, we can promise you safe passage out of the station. We'll keep the fighter wing of Psi-Corps. We'll keep them off of you. But this is an area where we can't. We have to hold our neutrality on it could have turned out much better, but yeah, it's now it's just a matter of how much blood."
Yeah, because now our telepath forces are divided.
Mm-hmm. Well, Byron, fueled by emotion and his ideals for nonviolence and all of that, picks a fight while he's saying, I don't want to fight. But his people, for the second time that we've seen some of his people, they don't share that ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm threatened. I'm fighting. Oh, no, we're peaceful. Well, no, you're peaceful.
You don't challenge.
I'm fighting.
You never challenge a fight unless you're going to back it up. Bluffing is a good way to wind up hurt or dead.
Yeah.
You avoid the fight if you can, but if you're put in the position of fighting, then you fight.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's with, well, I guess no, this would be the other side, but say his guys are ready to fight. What was the line? Fight, you know, fight and kill if necessary. And the dude's holding an oversized pair of garden shears or whatever those were.
Yeah.
You go get them, killer.
Yeah.
I guess this is where I give my famous meanwhile back. So, meanwhile, back on Centauri Prime, Londo is getting insistent about seeing the regent. And while he's doing that, you see this little hand in the distance.
Yeah.
Waving.
Hello.
Yep.
Hi. It's me hiding around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Regent Verini, we find out, is trying to protect Londo. And we hear how they like Londo in one of the saddest, most heart-wrenching pieces of the episode.
Yeah, and who is they?
Well, let's hear it from Verini.
Regent! Regent Verini!
Hello, Valari. Beautiful night, isn't it? As nights go. And they go so quickly now.
Are you all right?
Yes, yes. No. I'm glad we got there in time to save you, Malari. You know, you were the only one who treated me fairly when Cartagia was here. But he's still here, isn't he? His legacy.
Was it you who saved me?
No. Not exactly. It was them. They like you, you know. That's why they saved you. They say you are just like them. They say you have much in common.
They? Who are they?
Shh. Quietly, Londo. Quietly. Will follow me. You will be emperor soon.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry. They have a message for you. They say, we know you have been asking about our supplies and ships. They say, let it go. You will understand it all soon enough.
No, I want to understand it now.
No! No, you don't. If you have ever believed me before, Londo, believe me now. You still have time. Enjoy it. Run in the sunlight. Eat, laugh. Like a fool. You have so little time. You should go now. Quickly.
Regent.
We will speak one more time before the end. Go now. Go on.
That was just heartbreaking.
Yeah, a lot of cryptic talk, and who knows, you know, and he's sorry that Londo is going to become emperor. Very, very sorry.
And his time to enjoy the pleasant nights and all is limited. That's ominous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's not speculating. He's stating it as a warning.
He's stating.
Mm-hmm. And then he goes from being his usual jovial and now in this case drunk self to getting very stern.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's horrible. By the way, did you guys catch the reuse of language? And I think it was on purpose. Byron earlier in his rant, his plea, his threat, all, you know, arguments, all of that, talks about the Vorlons and says that their legacy is still here, right? When he's told they're gone, don't get over it. And he says, no, their legacy is still here.
Mm.
Now, we watch the regent talking to Londo about Cartesia. And he says, but Cartesia's legacy is still here. He's still with us.
Yeah.
But Verini uses that burden as a reason to do things to try to protect Londo by effectively sacrificing himself or putting himself at risk. Byron uses the argument to provoke violence, physical or otherwise.
To serve himself.
To serve himself.
Yeah. Even with and we see that we see a keeper tentacle wrapping around his neck. Verini is still trying to serve others.
Yeah.
In this case, Londo. And you're right. He pays for that warning.
Yeah. You know, he was a cartoon. He was a kind of a joke character in my eyes when we first meet him. And he's become a very noble, a very respectable, honorable man.
Mm-hmm.
As weird as he is,
mm-hmm.
What an awesome example.
And
he's not telling Londo what the real problem is. He's only telling him there's a problem.
Well, he can't. That would be one thing he's absolutely prevented.
Right.
We don't know if they killed him or just punished him, but...
Right. He says we'll talk one more time, so...
Yeah. So...
But, awful, heavy scene.
Did you guys catch the faux pas in the scene?
What was it?
Well, on the DVD, at least, the way it's framed, and I think it's probably because it's a full frame thing, at the beginning of the scene where you hear Verini chuckling off behind the throne, and then he comes out around in front to talk to Londo. Well, as Verini's coming out from behind the throne around the right side, on the left side, you can see the mic boom being withdrawn from where he was laughing into that before he came out around.
I missed it.
Yeah.
I've heard about this in the past, and every time I've rewatched the series, and I'm talking 5 or 6 times, at least a half a dozen times, I always forget to look for it.
I have never seen it before I watched this episode for this show. And I'm watching, and all of a sudden I just see this movement off to the right. And like, oh, wait, what was that? And I rewound it, and it's like, that's a microphone. Oh, my goodness.
You had one job, Bob. One job.
Well, you know, but the way it was probably framed for the television
standard def
broadcast, you'd have never seen it.
Yeah, it wasn't there.
for old 4x3, it wouldn't have been noticed.
Yeah, yep. you would have to see it on the DVD now.
Well, anyway, Londo is heading back to Babylon 5. For the first time, the palace frightens him.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea he gets out of there.
Yep, yep. And there's a lot more than just the palace that should be frightening him, because we see another freighter attack.
Yeah, and they're pleading with him. Look, we got children on board. We don't have anything you want. Why are you doing this? Please stop. Kaboom.
Kaboom.
And oh-ho, we find it is the Centauri that are firing the shots.
It sure was a purple Centauri wing we saw at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So there is something rotten in the palace.
Yes.
Well, recognizing it as the Drak and realizing that the keepers are connected to the Drak or associated with them, looks like someone is picking up the mantle of sowing discord.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to take, this is setting up the home stretch for the Centauri part of the arc. But we get a little bit more time with Londo being Londo on Babylon 5. And then it will... They actually spent several episodes with the dispersal.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this episode ends with Zach trying to de-escalate the situation.
Is this thing on?
Oh, gosh. Tap, tap, squee. Okay, as a sound man, that is one of the things that I hate the most.
Yeah.
You want to get me frosted, tap the end of a live microphone. No,
want me to do it now?
Don't do that. No. Snap your fingers in front of the mic.
But yeah.
I thought you were daring me. I can do it now if you want.
No.
Anyway, here's Zach. You know, oh, hey, is this thing on? All right, all you telepaths, this is over. You're no longer under the protection of the president of the galaxy, and it's time to get out of the pool. Now, yeah. Oh, by
hey,
the way,
Lita,
come on out and you and I will go for pizza and everything will be cool.
Pizza.
I'm just paraphrasing.
You're right, but it fits.
Yeah.
It fits. And he's really trying to, he knows where this is, how this is ultimately going to have to end.
Oh, yeah.
And to be honest, Byron knows he can't win on this. It's like, We can hold out maybe 3 days.
He's no longer in control of the situation. It's gotten away from him because of the way he's handled it.
He gave up control when he made the threat.
Mm-hmm.
And what it sounds like now is that he's doing exactly what all three of us have commented on in the past. He is setting himself up to be a martyr, and the question is now is going to become how many is he going to take down with him?
Right.
And I don't mean of the rest of the galaxy. How many of his own people is he going to lead to their doom?
Mm-hmm.
For his ego, basically.
We'll find out, that's for sure.
Are you saying in the next exciting episode we're going to find out?
Well, maybe not the next exciting, but not too many away.
Yeah, we're getting there.
So that takes us to the end of this this rather intense. You got to admit that it is intense, yeah. on both story arcs.
The drama's building.
So, thoughts, gents?
Yeah, I think we've laid bare now Byron's flaws.
Well, it's not hard to do when you're dancing them in public for everyone to see.
And, you know, we've got Londo who really doesn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah. A little bit of this and a little bit of that.
A little bit of that. So what do we have next time, Jim?
Well, now let's give JP a chance to give his thoughts.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Closing thoughts.
My closing thoughts are, I wonder what we're doing next time.
Oh, well, in that case, we're going to be looking at an episode called A Tragedy of Telepaths, in which the situation between the Alliance and the telepath colony continues to deteriorate when Bester arrives on the station. Molari and Jakar discover an old friend in the Centauri Royal Palace, and I wonder who that could be. Tune in next time and find out on the Babylon Project podcast.
He says with his real radio announcer voice.
No, that was my kind of radio announcer voice. This is my real radio announcer voice.
Okay.
All the hits in one place. I don't think I'm going to do that anymore. That hurts.
Oh, gosh. Thank you.
No, when I was talking on the radio for real, I used to have lots of fun.
Uh-huh.
You know, I would play play a tune and then say, that was Diana Ross singing Touch Me in the Morning, but touch me anyplace else and I'm going to slap your face.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So, at any rate, that's what we got for next time.
Yep. And JP, I'll let you have the last words of the show.
I think we had some boom at the very beginning.
So we had boom today?
We had boom today.
And at the end.
We had boom.
And at the end.
We got bracketed with boom.
Right.
A boom sandwich.
Because, you know, well, even if there's not boom today.
Will there be boom tomorrow?
Are we supposed to have some tomorrow, too?
There's always boom tomorrow.
I should have suspected.
Always. Good night, everyone.
So long, folks. Say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at The Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.